Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In Iowa, as our economy has changed, as our culture has changed, we've seen rural communities across the state change, and we've seen many of them struggle. We saw a huge cultural shift with the farm crisis, but the changes have continued for many reasons in the decades that have followed. There's been a great deal of school consolidation, which brings both benefits and challenges. We've seen communities struggle to keep businesses open, struggle to keep residents from moving away, or attempt to attract new residents. The people who live in and love these communities are always looking for ways to invest in the future. And this hour, we're going to focus on a program developed by the Orton Family Foundation, which is based in Vermont. It's called Community Heart and Soul, and it's the approach they're using to help revitalize rural communities around the country. We also want to hear from you this hour. What kind of creative approaches have you seen work in your community? Or maybe what are some of the challenges that you feel are most difficult? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And my first guest today is David Lucky. He is executive director of the Orton Family Foundation. Hello, David.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today. And although you're in Vermont now, I do need to establish a little bit of Midwestern credibility for you. You grew up in Ohio and you spent many years in Minnesota, right?
I did indeed. I graduated from my senior graduating class was, I think, about 46 seniors graduated back in Van Buren, Ohio, a long, long time ago. And I spent 28 years in the great state of Minnesota, and I am still a fierce Viking fan.
All right. Well, I want to talk about this program, the Community Heart and Soul program that has been developed by the Orton Family Foundation. Can you tell me a little bit about the genesis of the program?
Yeah, the founder, Lyman Orton, founded this foundation about 20, 26 years ago with a belief that there is great power and responsibility in this country to continue to build our country, our rural countryside, our small towns, that the very backbone and the important cultural values that we all have in small-town America are really important to continue in this country. And he set about building a foundation that would look at ways and opportunities that he could, from his aspect, support future decision-making and opportunities for small towns, even in the face of inevitable change. He was on a small town board himself, on a planning board, where they had spent a couple of years coming up with their comprehensive plan. And then a developer came into town with an idea that ended up tearing the town apart. Half the town was against it, half were for it. Arguments on the street, in city council chambers, and he was astounded by, after all this work they'd done, they hadn't really decided as a community what mattered most to them. And a simple response from a developer, as he likes to say, the scars on the mountain where the developer did the work lasted a lot longer than the scars in the community lasted a lot longer than the scars in the mountain. So we set about creating a system that might be better for people to come together and make decisions in our small towns.
Well, I mentioned in the introduction here in Iowa, so much of the cultural shift in the state we think of as dating back from the 1980s when we had the farm crisis in the state. And certainly that was a huge cultural shift. But this problem is not unique to Iowa. There are small communities all over the country that are struggling, and it's not because of one economic crisis or one cultural shift that happened at one point. I mean, this is the way that our culture is changing. It's made it a lot harder for small rural communities, right?
Yeah, I spend a lot of times in a lot of states throughout. I remember I used to do community and economic development work in the 18 counties of southwest Minnesota. Worked hard to get to know people, and the standard line about, well, we could go out and work together and get those farmers to do this or that. And the response would be, oh, no, they're too tough. They're too independent. You can't get them. They made it on their own. And then I have been working, ranchers in Colorado. And people say, oh, they're too tough. You can't get them there. They're too busy. They like to do it on their own. And then have you ever talked to a lobsterman on a commercial boat off of Maine? There's another tough crowd. But differences, we are in small towns very similarly unique, differently the same in a lot of aspects. It may be that Utown is struggling with closing mills that have closed. We work with a number of those. Or with what's going on in climate and that sort of thing, and your lobster catch is not what it used to be, and your community depended upon that on the ocean. Or where I worked in Minnesota, the loss of property values, loss of corn, soybean pricing, and what that devastation did in the 80s when I started working there. Yeah, different events, different causes, but we small towns have some resiliency, and we do have some similarities that run across all the towns that we're in.
Well, give me a thumbnail sketch of this community heart and soul approach. How does it work?
Focus first and foremost on the positive aspects of where you live. There are way too many communities that have focused for so long on what's wrong with where they are, that they didn't get that county seat, that the highway bypassed them, that there is a negative mindset that is set deeply into the culture and the fabric of the town. So much so that folks have forgotten what it is about this town that they love, that they cherish, that it matters to them, that it thrives, that there are opportunities there. So the model sets up, first and foremost, gathering people together and discovering, for sure, deeply, who's in your community, who lives, works, and plays in your community. Because one of the principles that we abide by in Community Heart and Soul is that we must involve everyone. Well, if you don't know who everyone is, you can't reach them. And we think we know everybody in our small towns. I will tell you as a fact, after working with hundreds of small towns, it ain't necessarily true. I was in a community of 2,000 in Ohio. City council person held up some information that they were all looking at and exclaimed loudly, when did all these 30 and 4-year-olds begin moving in? Who are they? When did this happen? Town of 2,000. didn't know there were a number of those folks that had been moving in. So first, a deep analysis of who is in our community. What's the demographic?
Right, which I can imagine that can be really challenging for some communities, because often the people who are most civically engaged are the people who have been there the longest. So they may have a very different idea of what this community is than someone who is a recent transplant and is equally part of the community.
Or someone who has never engaged much in that decision-making fabric of the community also, who's lived a whole life. The guy who runs the auto shop out on Highway 5 that's done that work forever since high school and is not quite engaged, and people don't know him that well. Yes, you're exactly right. Once you work hard through that, then it's a process of going to where those people are, discovering their stories. We even have questions that we have specifically developed that evoke out of your residents what it is about this place they call home that matters to them. What do they love about it? What do they cherish? What do they remember most as they were growing up? Or why did they move there in the first place, and why have they stayed? If they had an aunt and uncle come over, what would you tell them is the first thing they ought to do, see, go visit in this community? What makes you most proud of where you are? And the reason we do this is, one, it gets people thinking very much more positively. Two, people like to tell their story. We're all heroes of our own story. And by allowing people to tell their stories, they freely begin to recognize that which matters and is very positive about the community. And we also have techniques and mechanisms where these stories are shared. What happens is so many people rediscover or discover that so many neighbors believe the same thing they do about where they live, believe in the same opportunities or the positive aspects of it. I didn't know those folks who lived in that mobile home park believed the same way I did about this town. Huh, who would have thought? So we have creative ways that these folks are engaged. We never ask who's at the table. We ask whose table you are at to truly learn about what neighbors care about and are part of. This all gets worked into what we call heart and soul statements, which are your belief systems. Through all the work people have done in the stories, they then take all that information and build them into heart and soul statements. This is who we are. We cherish this. We're proud about that. We believe in us. To make this long story short, I hope, then it goes to we have action plans. We show you how to transform that asset, belief system, pride that you've developed into tangible decisions and actions you can make for the near and the long term. And we believe that they are much more likely to succeed because they're based on the belief system and the commitment and the resources within the community. We believe that everything we have and everybody we need is already where we live.
When you talk about these heart and soul statements, I mean, you've gathered stories from people, but mm-hmm. who decides what is most important in the community? How do you bring together a diverse group of people that can decide that?
One, you intentionally go bring them together. When I said whose table you're at, you are at the local laundromats gathering stories and ideas for those people who might be in a mobile home park and don't have, and it finds out that they spend time on weekends getting their clothes done in laundromats. Well, you're there engaging with people, asking them these questions, pulling that information together. You're at the bottom of church basements. You're at bowling alleys. You're at sporting events. You're places where people gather. You're places where they're comfortable and are willing to talk. And then when I say you, this is a rather large team of people doing this. And then you vet the answers back out to the community in community summits.
All right, and we're going to have to pick up where we left off in just a moment. I'm talking with David Lecky. He's the executive director of the Orton Family Foundation. This hour, we're talking about the foundation's community heart and soul approach to revitalize rural communities. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about rural communities, the struggles, the challenges that they face. And we're focusing on a program developed by the Orton Family Foundation based in Vermont. It's called Community Heart and Soul. It's the approach they're using to help revitalize rural communities around the country, including a few communities here in Iowa. Not the only approach available, not the only approach that works. We also want to hear your stories this hour about your communities, the challenges you feel they face, the things that make them special, the things that you've seen work to help revitalize your community in Iowa. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to bring some Iowa voices into this conversation and talk about some real-world examples, communities all over the country and here in the state where this program has been put into action and some of the things that have happened because of it. With me is David Lecky, Executive Director of the Orton Family Foundation. Also joining us now is Jason Nices, Community Heart and Soul Coordinator at the Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Charity. How are you today?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today. And of course, I'm sure some people hear Dubuque and think, well, that's not a small town. So we're not talking about Dubuque, the city. We're looking at a bigger picture with the Greater Dubuque Community Foundation. Give me a little idea of the area you serve.
Sure. So the Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque works in a 7-county region here in eastern Iowa, and most of that region is rural. And an important part of the Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque's work is how do we serve those rural communities? How do we increase the impact of philanthropy in those communities? And each one of those counties that we serve has a foundation board with volunteers who are very dedicated to understanding who lives in their communities and what the needs are, and how can those philanthropic dollars make the biggest impact? So we see the Community Heart and Soul program as a way that we can help bring those boards closer to the things that people care about in their communities and make sure that those dollars are doing the things that are going to strengthen those communities for the long haul. Philanthropy can solve short-term problems, but it can also invest in the long-term future of small towns. So we think Community Heart and Soul is a great investment that we can use to support all those kinds of efforts, that, and especially the things that make small towns unique and increase the quality of life in small towns in a way that will attract more residents, attract more businesses, and just make the communities very vital in a way that matches the enthusiasm of the folks that already live there.
So can you give me an example of when you first got involved in this program?
Well, I've been doing this work for almost 4 years throughout our region and have been visiting lots of small towns and really hearing from people about what they care about and what they want to do to take their communities to the next level. A lot of the towns that I've worked in so far, they're not broken. You know, the people there are happy. They're happy to live there. They've got a high quality of life already. They want to take it to the next level. What's the next investment we can make? How are we anticipating the needs of the future? So I work with community leaders to put together a plan that's going to work for them to help them make a good fit for Heart and Soul in their community. As David was mentioning before, a lot of times the people that get involved with Heart and Soul are not traditional community leaders. Like, it's not just the city council, or it's not just the city clerk or the mayor. It's non-traditional leaders who really get together and say, hey, you know, I love this town, and I might not be on the school board or whatever, but I can get involved and do something that'll help the future of the community. So those are the kinds of teams that I help put together throughout our region.
All right, and there are currently active Community Heart and Soul projects underway in Iowa. Mm-hmm. Where is this program working right now?
Well, we've already worked in Monticello, and we'll be hearing from Sheila later in the show. I'm currently working in Cascade and Bellevue as well, and we're also doing a project out in Madison County, Iowa, which is a little out of our seven-county region,
yeah.
But they've got a great team out there, and they're doing some incredible work. I've worked with a team in Mercer County, Illinois, as well. So we're really trying to establish a Midwest hub of communities that and create a good community of practice of innovative small-town leaders who all share this vision for the future around a heart and soul mentality.
Now, I know that Cascade is earlier in the process right now. You're in phase two in Cascade, which is, as we just had David walk us through how this program works. So phase two is what? What's going on right now?
Well, phase two is really the fun part. It's called Explore Your Community. So we've got a team of volunteers that are doing story gathering. This is a very humanities-based approach. A lot of planning processes and strategic planning processes are very data-driven, and Heart and Soul is also very data-driven, but our data is stories. It's the stories about why people care about their communities and what assets they have. We are an asset-based process. So rather than focusing on everything that's wrong, we've got to figure out why people live there and why other people might want to live there. So we gather stories, and very intentionally doing that based upon that demographic of who lives there, longtime residents and newer residents and immigrant communities and LGBTQ and veterans and youth, all of these people have stories to tell. So we very intentionally gather that from everybody in those different demographics. So that's what the team in Cascade is doing right now. We've got a meeting on Monday where they're putting together their story gathering strategy and how many interviews are they going to do? How many focus groups are they going to do? How many articles in the paper do we have to write? There's just a lot that goes into not just us gathering the stories, but also telling them back out into the communities. So we create the shared sense of common interest and common good about what people care about, because I think even though people in small towns do think they know each other and they know what everybody else is thinking, they don't articulate it very often. They don't say it out loud. You know, we always talk about the weather and we talk about high school sports and things, but people don't sit around in coffee shops and say, boy, I love this town. I love what's going on around here. You know, so we try to get that out in the open and create this shared sense of vision for what they want to strengthen.
For people who aren't familiar with Cascade, tell me a little bit about it.
Well, it's a really tight-knit community right along Highway 151, kind of between Dubuque and Cedar Rapids, not too far from Monticello, another one of our heart and soul towns. And it's got a lot of very strong family-owned businesses. It's got a great little downtown. It's right on a river, so there's some wonderful natural resources there as well. And what we've been focusing on really is making sure that the different stakeholders in the community who may have been working a little bit siloed, you've got downtown businesses, but then you've also got businesses that are kind of on the outside of town. You've got a strong agricultural community around that area that feeds into a lot of the local businesses. How much of a voice do they have in what's been happening in the community, especially something we find in small towns often, is the people that maybe even own businesses or work in town often live outside the city limits. So they can't even vote in municipal elections and things like that. So how are we giving them a different voice? So that's something we've talked about in Cascade. We've also talked a lot about youth involvement in Cascade because they've got a very strong school system, both private and public schools there. They've got great athletic teams, you know, state championship teams and things in Cascade. So how are we getting youth involved? Because they're the ones that already live there. How are we asking them to engage themselves in the future of the town? Maybe, like, what would Cascade have to be like for you to live here as an adult with your family? And that's just something that gets left out sometimes in traditional strategic planning or comprehensive planning processes.
Well, and telling us about Cascade makes it sound like a wonderful town, and I'm sure it's a wonderful town. What are the challenges that Cascade has been facing that made community members think, okay, we really need to do something?
I think a lot of it was there are a lot of great things going on in Cascade, but how unified are they as a community moving forward into the future, especially around things like downtown revitalization, for instance. You know, some wonderful downtown businesses exist in Cascade along their main street, but there's some open storefronts, there's vacant storefronts, there's buildings that need to be revitalized. How can we make that more of an initiative for the community as a whole versus just the people who are property owners downtown? What stake would a high school kid have in that old bank building getting revitalized currently? So how can we make that case? So that's just one small example of, you know, and we're not quite to the point of setting priority projects yet in Cascade. We're still doing that exploratory, what do folks care about stuff, but these are some of the issues that are already coming up there.
Have you run into any challenges in getting people to share their stories?
Well, you know, people are very humble, of course, and people don't want to, they don't say, you don't want to hear my story. You know, that kind of thing does tend to come up. So not everything has to be like an interview type story. We have lots of different methods that we use to gather stories. So we'll do interviews. We'll do focus groups. Well, we also do traditional type of surveys, you know, that we send out electronically or on paper form. So there are lots of different ways for people to tell their stories. In the heart and soul lingo, we often talk about you can get thin data, right, from people, things that are just like one or two word responses to easy questions, put up a big chalkboard at a community event where people can say what their favorite thing about town is. That's very thin. There's no context there. But then we also need to get thick data, like doing the interviews and doing the focus groups and doing follow-up questions. When people say that their favorite thing about Cascade is the riverfront park, well, what about that special to you? Why do you like the park? You know, that gets thicker and deeper. And I think that's the part that gets left out in a lot of community needs assessments. You know, you hear about what people like, but why? Why is that important to you? Do you like the natural environment? Or is it a place that you take your family? Like, those are both wonderful things, but they're different. So what do we need to focus on?
This hour, we're talking about small town revitalization and focusing on a program developed by the Orton Family Foundation, which is based in Vermont. The program is called Community Heart and Soul. I'm talking with Jason Nisus, Community Heart and Soul Coordinator at the Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque. David Leckie is also here with me, Executive Director of the Orton Family Foundation. And there are many communities, many small communities around the state of Iowa, around the country, that have large immigrant populations. In fact, it's been, you know, something that has really changed the face and the culture of many of our small communities. In some cases, it's really that's been a huge revitalization in and of itself. But also we have, in some cases, a real divide between the people whose families may have been in this community for several generations and people who are newcomers. And I can imagine, especially right now in our country, that if I'm a member of an immigrant community, I may not feel very comfortable with somebody from the local government coming around and asking me a lot of questions. David, how do you approach that with this program? How do you make sure that those voices are at the table?
We connect people. We help find out where those folks, whether it be immigrant, whether it be other folks who have lived there a long time, anybody who isn't part of the dialogue in the community, the decision-making process, we find those in our community who know how to connect. What's the best way to reach? Where would we find them? How would we approach them? Could you help us get there? And inevitably, people are connectors, and they step up, and they help engage and find the ways that are comfortable for anyone who's not used to being part of the process to be able to participate at a place and a time that is comfortable for them, where they can feel like they're being welcomed and asked genuinely and sincerely about who they are and why do they come to the community. And as the greater community is involved in this process, almost always, the wisdom of the crowd comes down in the community. And there is an embracing movement because small towns know that they need resources, they know they need people, they and population, and in fact, most communities that succeed do so because in one of their heart and soul statements, most communities end up saying something like this: we value being an open community, willing to embrace new people, new ideas, new opportunities. And that's how they figure out how to involve new folks into the heartbeat of their town.
Not everyone in the community probably feels that way.
I mean, absolutely.
So when you're coming up with a statement like that, who does that represent?
The vast majority of the community. In fact, not everyone will. Not every exact person does. There's no doubt, and I wouldn't guarantee that. But time and time again, we see the wisdom of the crowds, of the communities, that more people are open to this and embracing than sometimes national media, sometimes the story suggests that we aren't in rural areas. There is much more of it than there isn't. I know this from fact.
This process involves a lot of volunteer effort. In a community, Jason, like a community like Cascade, how many volunteers do you need to make something like this work?
Well, I would say we regularly, every month, we have our leadership team meeting, and every month around that table, there's about 15 folks. Each one of them has a pretty distinct role on that team, whether they're doing data analysis or story gathering or events or team leadership more broadly. Everybody has a pretty particular role. Marketing and communications is a really important part of the process. And then each one of those people has a small group of people. Some of them don't come to the monthly meetings, but they have more specific tasks. So I'd say in most of the communities I've worked in, that team grows to between 20 and 25 people, all said and done, who have either limited or very specific roles up to that very intense leadership level.
And how much of a commitment, I mean, obviously in the leadership level, there's a greater commitment. How much of a commitment are you asking people for?
Well, each town really sets their own team expectations. Each team needs to have a coordinator. Ideally, that's someone who's actually in a paid role, like who's being a paid kind of project manager, volunteer manager type of person. That person's commitment is much greater. Some towns have a better capacity to pay that person than others. If a lot of resources get put into that type of a role, but everybody kind of plays their part. And I would say the minimum requirement for that leadership team is you come to your team meetings, and then you've got other types of activities that kind of ebb and flow with where we're at in the process.
So a pretty significant commitment. We're going to have to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the Community Heart and Soul program from the Orton Family Foundation.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about revitalizing rural communities in Iowa and around the country. With me, David Lecky. He's executive director of the Orton Family Foundation, and we're focusing on the foundation's approach called Community Heart and Soul, which they've been using to help revitalize rural communities around the country and here in the state of Iowa. Jason Nisus is also with us, Community Heart and Soul Coordinator at the Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque. And let's bring another Iowa voice into the conversation from a community that is farther along in this process. Sheila Todden is Community Development Director at the Jones Regional Health Center in Jones County and also a volunteer with the Community Heart and Soul Program in Monticello. Hello, Sheila.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And Sheila, tell me a little bit about Monticello and how long Monticello has been involved with the Community Heart and Soul Program.
Sure. Monticello began we were actually selected through a grant through the Orton Family Foundation and the Dubuque Community Foundation. We began back in 2015, and we spent a little over 2 years going through the Heart and Soul process.
All right. So you said spent a little over 2 years. When was the culmination? When was the completion?
We finished up in the beginning of 2017, that first quarter in the early spring.
All right. And what was the thing that led Monticello to look for this kind of opportunity?
Well, Monticello was actually selected as a community we have this new program, would like to have a community try it out. And so they really came to us rather than us coming to them. But we were selected. But it was such a wonderful opportunity that was presented before us. We had had a school bond issue that had not passed. It actually failed with a 29% favorable rate. So I would consider that failing.
Mm-hmm.
Through the Heart and Soul process, that was one of the big things that we talked about was our school facilities. And that's really one of the things that came, rose to the top of the important things in our community was to improve our school facilities.
And then you voted on the bond issue again, right?
We did. We ended up throughout the process several steps along the way, but we ended up with passing a school bond vote last September of 2018, with a 79% in favor of. So we passed it with flying colors, I'll say.
So you really feel like the Community Heart and Soul process that you went through helped people in the community understand that schools were a bigger priority than maybe they had felt before?
You know, absolutely. Whenever you are able to ask people what they love about their community, they start talking about the positives. But then the question is, what would make it even better? And the answer to that question was, we need to improve our school facilities. And so we were able to gather that data. And so when the school facilities committee began in the summer of 2017, there were a few of us that were part of Heart and Soul who were also part of that school facilities committee. And we said, hey, we have data to support that, yes, our community is saying we need to improve our school facilities. It began conversations about what would that look like, what can our community get behind, and it ended up with a plan that there were several conversations about throughout all areas of our community, and we were able to come up with a plan that we felt, again, people would get behind, and with a 79% passing vote, I guess those numbers really speak to something took place. Was it only Heart and Soul? You know, there's never a straight line, but it certainly, I believe, had a real strong impact.
What made you want to volunteer with this program?
Well, first of all, I was asked. I was at the Great Jones County Fair. That's one of the positive things that we have in Monticello. And Gene Sullivan, who I knew not real well, but knew well enough, she was there and she was asking people, what do you love about Monticello? So struck up a conversation. I'm pretty involved in our community. And so when she asked, I felt like it was a great opportunity and kind of why not? Sounds like a great thing to do and be a part of.
And how much time do you think you invested over the years?
Oh, gosh. I would say probably a couple of hours a week on average for a couple of years. Some was less, some was more, but right around there. We had probably about 20 people who were probably spent about that much time.
What do you feel made it worthwhile to you? Because that's a significant commitment, and a lot of people are really reluctant to volunteer that much time.
Absolutely. You know, for me personally, it was, I enjoy being involved in the community. I enjoy those things. But when we worked on the school project, and I work professionally in community development here at the hospital, and so I understand the importance of some of those pillars in our community, healthcare being one, education being one. So knowing how important our school was in our community, I guess that really drove my passion to see it through. And I was able to work with amazing people along the way. But that gratification of having that bond vote pass at 79%, that was just simply awesome, that moment. But when I think about what that means for our future, that is really, to me, what is real meaningful. If you have, I believe, healthcare and education strong in your community, many things are a ripple effect of those successes. So knowing the importance of it, enjoying that kind of thing, and just knowing what positive things will come from that.
I'm talking with Sheila Todden, Community Development Director at Jones Regional Health Center in Jones County, and she spent a couple of years volunteering with the Community Heart and Soul Program in Monticello. Also with me, Jason Nices, Community Heart and Soul Coordinator at the Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque, and David Leckie, Executive Director of the Orton Family Foundation. You are welcome to join our conversation as well, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Peter is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Charity. Nice talking to you. It's been a while. My comment, a couple comments. Back in the early 80s, I had a job where I traveled around the state of Iowa, and I saw the thriving businesses in a lot of these small towns. And in a general perspective, rural communities across the country, and the more people live in rural communities than they do in big cities, their revitalization is critically important to this country. And for me specifically, being in the clothing business and living here in Des Moines, you know, you would think, oh, Des Moines is thriving. Well, we used to have 9 independently owned clothing stores in downtown Des Moines. Now we have none. And there are only 3 independently owned clothing stores, one being a Big and Tall, which I work for. And in country as a whole, 10 years ago, there was 175 Big and Tall men's clothing stores. Now there's less than 40.
Right. So you're seeing this trend in small towns, in big cities, where we're seeing a lot of the local independent businesses close, the big box stores have opened. David, that's a trend we've seen across the country. It's something that affects small towns disproportionately, where people are driving, you know, 20, 30, 40 miles to go shop at these bigger stores to have more options. When business is moving in one direction and you feel like your little town is being left behind, that's one of the real challenges that people in these communities face. How do you tackle that?
Boy, there's a lot of different programs and attempts that are out there to try to tackle that particular problem. And I don't have the answer to that, but I do firmly believe that people in communities, when they pull together their own resources and realize everything that still exists there, will have those best answers figured out for themselves. Quick example. Biddeford, Maine, a town of about 20,000. Big mill town. The mills went down. They had this huge trash incinerator in their town. They became known as Trash Town. Just everything was empty storefronts. Everything was horrible. They went through finding and discovering and embracing their heart and soul. They realized what was important to them and what mattered, and I won't go into all those details, but I'll give you the results. Since they pulled themselves together and defined themselves as a community of people who knew who they were, they themselves have increased and invested $90 million into their downtown, the revised buildings. They have businesses taking up residence in these old abandoned mill towns. They buildings. They use that old asset to their advantage. They now are a millennial playground where people are coming because they're right by the water, et cetera, et cetera. If somebody had walked in and said, well, you know what you need to do? You need to build a youth entrepreneurial program. Some consultant comes in and says that. Well, yeah, maybe, who knows if that'll work. But when the townspeople themselves figure out what's unique enough to their community, what they're willing to commit to, the volunteers come out of the woodwork and they figure out what is right-sized for them, what they think fits their community, and what they will build from. So here's the important thing about economic development, and I did a ton of it, still do as a matter of fact, back in Minnesota. But I have firmly convinced that people have it backwards. People don't live in an economy. They live in a community. Build your community first, and you will figure out what economy you build to support it.
Interesting. Well, and it's interesting. I want to hear both Jason and David, your response to this as well. You talk about Biddeford, Maine, and it's right on the water. It has this amazing asset. And Jason, here in Iowa, the communities that we've just talked about, the Community Heart and Soul program in Monticello is in a very beautiful part of the state on the Maquoketa River. You talked about Cascade, also just a really beautiful part of the state. Madison County, also known for its natural beauty. When a community doesn't have an asset like that, it feels like this process would be a whole lot harder. David?
I know of a town of 2000 in the flatland of Ohio, 8 months after getting into this process, they had started up or expanded 8 businesses in their downtown. And they don't have a river. They don't have a mountain within 1,000, who knows how far you could find. It's God's gift to them to live on some of the flattest land on the earth. But within their community, they discovered people when they were encouraged and they saw other people might be willing to invest in the downtown, they took the investment risk and started making some things happen. It's not all about physical assets. To the contrary, it's all about the people, capital, and their spirit. I know this for a fact, that people invest in what they care about. And when we rediscover what we care about, where we live, people will come out and they will volunteer. They'll take a look at investing again. When they see there's a future and there's opportunity, your own townsfolks will make it happen.
Do you have anything you want to add to that, Jason?
Yeah, I think David's hit on a couple important points, and I think just the taking it to the next step of having people articulate those things and hear what they care about and make sure that other people know that they care about the same things. I think we keep this stuff bottled up sometimes, and especially by articulating those things and telling those things to our youth. Having the youth hear the caring adults in their life talk about those things is inspiring to them. And for many decades in Iowa and many rural communities all across the nation, there was always a why would you stay here attitude. Like, why would you come back to this place? Like, they heard these kinds of things from their adults. And what did they do? It was a self-fulfilling prophecy. They left. So we need to change the narrative. You know, I've been very inspired by a lot of the work that has been done by a rural sociologist in Minnesota, Ben Winchester, who talks about the rural narrative. Like, how do we talk about our towns? And how do we talk about our assets, especially to our young people? In Bellevue, Iowa, we did a really great study with some youth there. And a very high percentage of those youth, I think over 70% of those kids in high school said, we would like to live in Bellevue if, you know, we had a job, if we had some quality of life things that would really attract us back here. And I think a lot of the adults were like, wow, we assumed you all wanted to leave. Well, because you never asked. And we need to ask our youth to get involved in these things and think about what is that next generation of leadership. It's much easier to get kids who have already lived in your town to live in that town than it is to attract people who are unfamiliar with your town to move there. So we've got that closely held asset in every one of our towns that we need to get involved in this work. And I think, to me, that's the follow-up to what David was describing about this community pride and really getting people involved to map those assets and take advantage of what you already have instead of listening to some advice from outside.
Well, Jason, we have run out of time, but thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having us on.
Jason Nice is Community Heart and Soul Coordinator at the Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque. Sheila Todden, thank you.
You are very welcome. My pleasure.
Sheila Todden, Community Development Director at Jones Regional Health Center in Jones County and a volunteer with the Community Heart and Soul Program in Monticello. And David Leckie, thank you so much.
You're welcome, and go Iowa small towns.
David Leckie, Executive Director of the Orton Family Foundation. We've been talking about the foundation's program, Community Heart and Soul, their approach to revitalizing rural communities around the country. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.